80s or else extremely close to his 80s. So this is what's going on. Daniel's old. Belshazzar's an idiot. The kingdom is falling apart. Now Belshazzar thinks, of course, as most kings did, that they are the best king that ever lived. And they are all powerful and they can do whatever they want. And he did. Well, I shouldn't say he did. He thought he did. History doesn't record much of him. So history doesn't think very much of him at all. But he was full of self-pride, so it didn't matter. But he was a pretty stupid man. His nation of Babylon was in massive decline. Morally, physically, the borders were collapsing, and economically. When he received his kingdom, it extended from Egypt up to Turkey, way over to Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, that whole large Middle Eastern area, parts of Saudi Arabia. It was a large kingdom. That's what he got when he took over. Now in our passage, we see he's throwing a huge party for 1,000 nobles and rulers. Well, kind of a large party back then. A lot of the people would have 1,000 or more people. The party would last for weeks. I mean, if you travel 500 miles to go to a party, you're not just going to be there for a couple of hours. You're going to be there for quite a while. So he's having this big party, and in his arrogance, he calls for the silver and gold goblets and other items that had been brought back from Jerusalem by his father. So these things had been in storage for 40, 50, 60 years, not touched by Nebuchadnezzar. But he brings them out. He has everybody drinking from them. Now, these are holy items. These are very special items. And they're being abused by this pagan king. If they would drink from those items, and use those items, they could be mocking the Jews who were in their kingdom. They'd be mocking the God who they believed. They would be showing disgrace. And they would be showing God, if he existed at all, and everyone else how great they were and how powerful they were, because they could take this worship stuff and use it however they wanted. No one could stand against them. That was the thought. Lots of self-pride. Well, self-pride seems to be a problem in our nation today. Some people think like Belshazzar and his friends, hey, I'm great. I'm good. I can do anything I want. I control my own destiny. I control what is right and what is wrong. I can get rid of my enemies anytime I want. I am in control of everything. And we certainly, certainly don't need a God. Because I'm God. I can do it all. We have a lot of that today. Let's change the laws to go against God's word. Let's do this and let's do that. Let's destroy these people. Let's bring out our hate and drive other people underground. Get rid of them. Because we're in control. Self-pride. Because we know God is for the weak people. They need something to hang on to. God is for the ignorant people. God is for the superstitious people. So they mock the people of God. They mock God. And you know it as well as I do. You know, just watch the entertainment. Well, entertainment. Watch the news. And I don't know if any of you know, we're in an election year. Watch that. See how that's going. Attack God's people, mock them in any way they can. Attack them physically. Attack them verbally. And if we're honest, we kind of fall in that same trap every once in a while too. I did that by myself. I'm pretty good, you know. You can't tell me what to do. I know what to do. If you ever get that way, just ask your a spouse or a close friend, how perfect am I? How powerful am I? And you'll be glad you were talking to your spouse or friend instead of God. They might be a little bit more liberal on you. Ooh, that's a dirty word. A bit more freedom against you. There are times when we fall in our calling as a Christian. There are times when we fail in our confessions as a Christian. And we tend to think, maybe I'm a lot better than others think I am. A little self-pride there. And that's why God sends messages to us. So let's return to our friend Belshazzar. He and his friends are enjoying the party. They continue to mock God. They keep living in their self-pride. And suddenly, without any warning, these fingers appear on the wall. And they start writing. The palace was the place that symbolized Belshazzar's power. And now these fingers come and start writing. They weren't invited. Somebody has invaded his palace. They began to write. And it seems that the king sobered up fast. His face turned pale. His knees began to knock together. He fell on the floor. You can almost picture him curling up like a little baby. What's happening? Afraid of nothing. And now whimpering on the floor. Now, I don't know about you, but if I was at that party, I would have been the first one out the door. To see something like that on the wall, being written on the wall. But some of the braver people went up and looked at it, and the king got up, and apparently he went over to see what was going on, and they saw a message written on the wall. They couldn't understand it, but they saw it. And so the king called for help. This powerful little king calling for help. Get the enchanters, get the diviners, get the wise men, get the astrologers. Read this message for me. Interpret this message. I'll give you a purple robe, sign of royalty, and I'll give you a gold chain. And I'll make you third ruler in the kingdom. Well, that's pretty good incentive. So everybody came. But nobody could interpret the readings. Belshazzar couldn't buy himself out of this one. So he became more frightened. Everyone was mystified. And then the queen came in. Probably, we're not told, but probably a young, would have been a young widow of Nebuchadnezzar, maybe the queen mom, came in. And she says, oh, there's a guy that your father dealt with. His name is Daniel. He came with the Jewish exiles, and he was able to do magic things. He was able to interpret riddles and do other interpretations of dreams and all kinds of stuff. So Belshazzar stands for Belteshazzar. Come and interpret my writings. Maybe he would have the answer. You know, there comes a time when every person, president, dictators, business executive, you and me have to stand before God and face his message. Sometimes that message is going to be pretty good. Sometimes that message isn't going to be very good at all. Sometimes we may not fully understand the message. We can't quite interpret it. But we're going to see the message. Those who try to ignore him their entire lives are going to see him face to face. And they're not going to be able to ignore him anymore. Those who close their ears to his message are going to hear his message. They may not accept it, but they're going to hear it. Those who thought he never existed are going to find out, well, I was wrong. He is alive. He does exist. God sends many messages of warnings and dangers, messages of hope, encouragement. We just have to be able to interpret them, and that can be a very difficult task at times. So what is God telling us? Well, Belshazzar, he certainly wanted to know what was going on, so he called for Daniel, Belteshazzar, also known as. So this king who thought he controlled everything, was in charge of everything, calls in this little old Jewish guy, a foreigner. Says, can you read this for me? What a picture. And he says, if you do that, I'll give you all these gifts. And Daniel says, keep your gifts. You know, that's one of the great things about getting older. There are a lot of things you don't care about anymore. And Daniel didn't care about those gifts. Keep them. I don't want them. But I'll tell you what God is telling you. It's kind of interesting. In a way, Daniel was telling the king, I'm sorry, God's word is not for sale. I'll tell it to you for nothing. Well, Daniel looks at the wall and he reads the words. But first he got a little dig for the king. He says, you have not humbled yourself before God. You saw how God had humbled your father Nebuchadnezzar, but you didn't follow in line. You have not humbled yourself. You set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You praise the gods of silver and gold and bronze and iron and wood and stone. You don't honor the God who has your life in his very hands. Therefore, he sent you this inscription. Many, many tackle parson. It's interesting that these words are Aramaic words. Okay, that's very similar to Hebrew. These weren't in the Babylonian language. These were in the Aramaic language, the Jewish language. It's also interesting that the Jewish language, especially the Aramaic, was used in Babylon for all of its business dealings. These were common business words. In fact, later on, even the Persians used Aramaic for business dealings. It was so interesting. This is Hebrew. And everybody there, the wise men, should, and they probably did, know what the words meant, but they sure didn't know what they meant in the palace of the king. Many, many tackle parson. Number. You're numbered. Okay. You go to the marketplace. You got 8 pounds of wheat to sell, so you go there. You're numbered. You have 8 pounds. When those 8 pounds are gone, you're out of business. You got to go home. Time is over. But numbered. Twice God mentions, you're numbered. Tekel, to be weighed. You know, you go to the marketplace and you put a 16-ounce weight on one side of the scale so you can get 16 ounces of wheat on the other side. And you want to make sure they balance. If they don't balance, tekel, you're out of balance. You're short. Parson, you're divided. You go and you get your pound of wheat and mom wants to bake some bread, so you give her some of the wheat, and your next door neighbor didn't get paid this week, so they need some wheat, so you give some wheat to them, and you spread it around, and eventually what you had, you don't have anymore. You gave it away. It was divided. And so that's what these words meant. But what in the world did they mean in the king's palace? You're numbered, you're weighed, and you're divided. Well, Daniel was there to help him out. Your days are numbered, king. It's all over. You ran out. You ran out of days. God's been numbering them and numbering them, and you're done. Tekel, you've been weighed, and you're coming up way short, king. You are so far short, you will never make it up. And parson, your kingdom's divided. It's so interesting because it was divided between the Medes and the Persians who had joined forces some years earlier. He didn't say it was taken away. No, it was divided. The Medes got half, the Persians got half. And you get nothing. Well, judging from his previous reactions, you would almost think that the king would be on the ground crying again. No. He calls in for the purple robe, he calls in for the gold chain, and he tells Daniel, you are now the third ruler in the kingdom. And Daniel says, well, whoopee, it's going to last a couple of hours and it's done. That's not an exact translation, by the way. It's gone. You have nothing to give me. It's over. And then the king says, on with the party. Let's start drinking again. Let's get those gold and silver goblets out again and drink and drink and drink and drink. And then the verses simply say, and that night he was killed. He didn't even know in his palace that the armies of the Medes and Persians were outside the city wall. They were there already. They had come through the borders. They had taken his army. They had stuffed up the river that flowed into the town to supply the water. They stuffed it up, waited for it to dry, and crawled into the city through the dry riverbed. And they took the city, and they took the kingdom. He didn't even know they were outside his door. But he ended up short, and he was divided. It concerns me when you read this, the similarities between Babylon and the U.S. No, I'm not going to get into politics. You get enough of that. But we got problems. You know, a man a while ago asked me, he says, what's going on in our world? It's nothing but trouble. What are we going to do? Where's it all going to end? Why do we have all this? And he was a man, he, as far as I know, didn't have any faith. I said, well, I'll tell you. He said, what do we need to do? I said, the cause is sin. Sin. He acted like he never heard the word. Sin? 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 Well, I'll have to think about that. You can think about it all you want, but it's there. He says, all you can do is take care of yourself and do the best you can. Well, Belshazzar did the best he could. A lot of people through history have done the best they could, and it hasn't turned out very well. But this message applies to us as well. Many. How much time do you have left? The count has been going. You're only given so much. How much do you have left to do what God is calling you to do? Time keeps moving. And the answer is, don't know. Then you better get busy. Tekel, you're being weighed. Is the best you do enough or not? Or are you going to come up short? Without God, you don't know. Parson, the time is going to come when everything you have is divided. You ever see those signs that say estate sale or auctions? Hey, it's being divided. All you have is on loan. Soon there'll be nothing left. That's a sad story for Belshazzar. Seems like he got the message and he hit the delete button. He set himself up against God. Isn't that a terrible phrase? Set yourself up against God. But for Christians, same message. Different outcome. Many. You know, Psalm 90, verse 12, a psalm written by Moses. Moses wrote some of the psalms written by Moses. It says, teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Live life to the fullest under God's guidance, under God's word. Live it with God, not in your own selfish pride. Tekel, we're being weighed. We know we're sinners. We know we're not going to make it. But when we look at the balance, we have God's salvation, the sacrifice of Jesus, his life, his resurrection. It's so wonderful. His forgiveness. We made it. Parson. We know nothing we have is our own. It's all borrowed from God. He gives it to us. Same message. Exact same message, but what a different view of life. It all depends on how we listen to God's messages. Do we accept them? Or do we delete them? He leaves that to us to decide. But there's really only one practical choice. Got to read it. Got to make it part of our lives. This time, our hymn of response. is number 506. I'd rather have Jesus than silver or gold.